This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. 25% of children experience some type of mental disorder in any given year. Anxiety disorders, depression, and ADHD are the most common mental disorders seen in children. We're going to talk today about these and other conditions. Joining me are Senior Vice Chair and Director of Clinical Operations with the University of Cincinnati Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neuroscience, Dr. Charles Collins. He's on the phone with us, and North Key Community Care Director of Outpatient Behavioral Health Services, Larry Lindemann, here in the studio. We'd like to hear from you, too. You can call in at 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Pleasure to be here.
Good afternoon, Dr. Collins.
Hello. How are you?
Just fine. I'd like to start out talking a little bit about some of the issues with the mental conditions that folks may be facing and some of the diagnoses. And it seems that we see more and more of them over the years. Is it because there really are more cases or just because more cases are being diagnosed? And Dr. Collins, we'll start with you.
Sure. Well, we're certainly busy, particularly this time of year, because school brings out a lot of stress and anxiety in kids. So as a result, at the end of school, we see a lot of kids. I really think that we've done a better job in actually identifying and finding cases. So I think probably the percentage of these things are probably the same, but we're just doing a better job in bringing it forth and try to identify to take care of it.
Larry?
Yeah, I would agree. Also, it's important to note that until recently, there wasn't statistics on this, and that just recently, the Center for Disease Control talked about that there's some federal activities that are tracking U.S. mental disorders with children, and so we'll be able to see a trend, whether it's increasing or decreasing, based on the information that we're getting now.
Yeah.
Is there any difference or is there any measurable data that shows which particular disorders are showing up more now, or is it sort of across the board, a variety of topics?
Well, I think really it's across the board for children. We don't have the very severe things that we have with adults. For example, schizophrenia is something I would use. But basically for kids, it is ADHD, depression, anxiety, and probably some conduct problems and oppositional behavior. So those are the most common things that we see. And again, I think the numbers are high only because, you know, again, we're finding it more in schools.
Larry?
Yeah, I would say that those are the more common disorders. ADHD is probably the most common diagnosed disorder. Behavioral conduct disorders after that, and anxiety, depression. For adolescents aged 12 to 17, substance abuse disorders is something that is occurring more often, maybe 12% if you're including drugs and alcohol and cigarette dependence.
With all of these varying issues, I think people are curious, parents especially, how young do you first start to notice them?
Well, actually, you can notice some things very young, actually. And I would even go back as less than four or five, particularly when kids make a transition to school. We notice that anxiety disorders first pop up. You know, we call it separation anxiety. So actually some things, ADHD is another thing that we actually can see, again, fairly early because the kids sort of function at a level where other kids don't. So you notice some things early. You can pick some things up, actually, from 4 to 7.
Right. Preschool, early childhood disorders it's pretty common to be able to diagnose and work with children and parents at that young of an age.
You talk about separation anxiety, and I think there hasn't been a parent in the world when they've tried to drop their preschooler off at school or daycare where they haven't had to peel them off of them at one point or another. And at what point do you say, yeah, this is normal, they miss mom and they're going to have a bad day, to, oh my goodness, we need to get some help because this is really serious? How do you decide that?
It's sort of a fascinating area because I think American children have such a variability in their readiness for certain things. And that's one of the criticisms I guess we currently have of our system is that sometimes we're pushing certain kids to actually go to school a little bit earlier and do certain things. So I think there's a stress there. Some kids have a readiness and some kids don't. So when they have it and it ends up being a total disruption of their day and yours, that's when we consider it to be pathological, because what happens in school, the child will be sent back home. if they're unable to tolerate leaving you or their, whatever, their families, then they're going to be a mess in school. So I think that we have to look at the kids' readiness to go to school, their maturity level, and when this happens. So we're seeing a little bit more of that only because just the way we are in society.
Larry?
And it can be very disruptive.
Larry?
Identifying mental health disorders in children can be tricky for providers because children differ from adults in that they experience many physical and mental and emotional changes as they progress through their natural growth and development. They also are in the process of learning how to cope with their environment and how to relate to others. And so a dramatic change like going from their home to school is another opportunity for them to deal with challenges. And each child does mature at his or her own pace. And so what's considered normal in children falls into a wide range of behavior and abilities. I would say that if somebody that you trust or if you believe that your child is got some issues that fall outside of what a lot of other children are doing, then I would look to get some help and trust your instincts and trust the teachers who work with 20, 30, 40 kids every year so they have a pretty good sense of what's going on.
And a pediatrician is usually good in screening too. Yeah.
So you talk to your doctor. If you find this problem, the
Right.
first place you should go is to the pediatrician.
Yes.
And
Yeah.
I think there are probably issues where the children, to some extent, depending on who they are, some kids will cry when mom and dad, don't leave. And as soon as mom and dad walk out the door, they're
You're
fine.
okay.
I assume those are not the ones you're concerned about. You're concerned about the ones that all day long are
All
unable
day
to
long.
stay.
Right. Or if it
Right.
lasts for an extended, if it's for the first couple of days of dropping them off at school, it would be considered normal. If it's their second year of school and they're still doing that every day, then that would be something to be worried about.
You also
Yeah.
mentioned, I'm sorry, Dr. Collins.
No, I was going to mention some of the kids even have more trouble with breaks. I mean, particularly if they have a break and then they return to school, the same pattern happens all over again. So those kids typically are identified for some kind of intervention.
You mentioned depression as well as one of the problem areas. Let's talk a little bit about what to look for with that. When you talk about 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, I think none of us really, not many people have experienced depression that they've recognized. What should parents be looking for? Larry, we'll start with you.
Okay.
Sure. For younger children, it can be a lot of different things. Trouble sleeping. It can be if they have stomach aches or if they're behaving differently than they were before. Tearfulness. It can come across as temper tantrums or anger sometimes. So with young children, it's a lot of different things. If just something's unusual, then you would need to go and have further diagnosis on it.
Dr. Collins?
Yeah, the young, I agree with Larry. The young children don't appear like the adults. The adults tend to mope around and look sad, where the younger kids actually can appear really more hyperactive and anxious, actually, and have the tantruming. So I think it's a very different animal with the younger children. In addition, they tend to have far more self-esteem issues and probably outbursts that happens. So again, it's a very different picture, and you can actually see that at a very young age.
And many children have more than one mental illness, which can mean that it's more difficult getting a diagnosis because they could have ADHD on top of depression or anxiety or something else. So it's just any changes in their behavior, you would want to get further assessments.
We're talking about children's mental health issues, and my guest today are willing to take your questions, 513-419-7100. We have Senior Vice Chair and Director of Clinical Operations with the University of Cincinnati Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neuroscience, Dr. Charles Collins, and North Key Community Care Director of Outpatient Behavioral Health Services, Larry Lindemann. Again, our phone number is 513-419-7100. You also can email your questions, talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. How serious a problem is all of this? I imagine they can really range from the very severe cases to the less severe. What is that range? Dr. Collins?
Well, one of the things I've enjoyed being a child psychiatrist is that kids are very, very resilient. So I think when you identify one of these issues, either ADHD, depression, anxiety, something that is pretty easily treatable. So I think they can be very severe. They can be mild to severe, but each one of them actually can have a very good prognosis depending if you get on top of them to take care of it. The more serious things are probably more adolescent kind of things. We've been talking about young kids, but the more serious kinds of disorders can happen a little bit later, with the substance abuse and developing very severe depression or even potentially becoming psychotic. And those are the more serious things that can happen in that latter window of adolescence, like from 17 to 18. So those things are far more serious than some of the things we've talked about thus far.
Larry?
Sure. With younger children, I think actually with anybody, you could possibly go into treatment and, 6 to 10 sessions later, have a great improvement in what you're doing at home and how your behavior is. And at the other extreme is something that could be lasting your whole life and that you're going to be working with through the rest of your life.
Again, our number 513-419-7100. Jan's calling from Camp Washington. Hi, Jan. What's your question?
Hi, I just wanted to comment. Thank you so much for bringing this issue on, into public hearing. So many people don't believe that children can be mentally ill and that they are merely bad or the parents are bad parents or that there are other reasons for their behavior than those that are treatable. I have a son, adult son, and an adult grandson now who were both diagnosed with mental illness as children, and the services that were available when they were young are very different from the services that are available now. So I'm very grateful for the people that are working with the young people, and but I do know that there's a reduction in the number of residential beds available for children with mental illness, and I'm not sure that that's altogether a good thing. So I'll take your comments off the air. Thank
Well,
you.
thank you so much for your call.
Okay.
Any comments, Dr. Collins?
Sure. I really appreciate that caller calling in here. I do think there has been a change in our system, and there has been a reduction. When you use the word like residential beds, that's sort of a long-term kind of thing for kids that are very severe. And that is true that Ohio has actually had a drastic reduction in those kinds of beds. So we say if a kid needs to go to hospital for severe depression or suicide, more likely they will, go to Children's Hospital. But there's no long-term beds for kids that need treatment for 6 months or so. So that is very true. But I do think we've in this area, the outpatient services really have been beefed up, and some partial hospitalization programs have been added. So I think there are some special things about Cincinnati that we've done a little bit better job than other parts of Ohio in terms of assuring the kids get the best care.
What should you do, and how do you go about treating young children with issues? I know in some cases with ADHD, there's medication, but are there other ways to treat some of these issues, Larry?
Yeah, actually, my preference would be that parents work with the school because generally it's school-aged children that are having this issue come up, and there's things that you can put in place to help them be organized, pay attention, focus more before you would start with medication. And that would include, just where they're sitting in the classroom and how they're taking notes, and is the teacher getting with them after each class to make sure that they have their homework written down and check. And sometimes there are kids that are doing their homework and they're so unorganized that they're getting zeros on their homework grades because they're just not turning it in. So some things like that being put in place can make a big difference.
Rachel's calling from Pleasant Ridge. Hi, Rachel. What's your question?
My daughter is 5 this year and supposed to be starting kindergarten, and she was a preschool dropout. So she went for about a month when she was 3.5 and had started to have some behavioral issues, and she just could not stay longer than about 20 minutes before I had to come back and pick her up. Now she's matured a lot since then, but what type of things would I be looking for to make sure that she is ready for kindergarten?
Dr. Collins?
Okay, how old is the child again? I'm sorry.
She is 5.
Yeah, 5 years old. So she's one of the kids that I kind of referred to earlier in terms of a certain readiness for school. I mean, I would always make sure that you have a screening with a pediatrician in terms of anything that's going on to make sure she's developmentally at the right level. The other kinds of things I think that Larry mentioned, some kids need sort of a special thing per school, so that's when we come in to make sure that kids have a certain readiness, that they have the psychological abilities, they don't have any learning kinds of things, and then we look at the anxiety things. So I think you have to screen a couple of different things before you sort of take her in and to make sure she doesn't have any stresses.
Does that answer your question, Rachel?
Uh-huh, that does. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Our number is 513-419-7100. Trevor's calling from Madeira. Hi, Trevor.
Hello.
What's your question?
My question is, I'm 30 years old, and I was recently diagnosed with inattentive ADHD after giving me some difficulty in life. And it seems like it's more difficult for adults who have been recently diagnosed with ADHD to receive treatment and medication than kids. I guess one of those reasons is because they are a little hesitant to hand medication out to somebody my age for ADHD. Most of the time it's Ritalin or amphetamines or something like that. So I was wondering if you've noticed any difficulty for people who are diagnosed later on in life.
I guess I'll take that. We do see a lot of young people now may have been missed, again, when they were kids or something, or because this issue is probably something that happens really early. So we actually are seeing more young adults with ADHD. It's actually, when you look at the same thing, it's really work is equivalent to going to school. So we have to look at, like, issues with work, family, for an adult, and the treatment is sort of similar. We often ask people to, if they want to use medicine, fine, but often there's other little things that may happen within the family or relationships, so we actually recommend having therapy at the same time. So again, the approach is sort of similar, and we use a similar drug. So again, I think it can work. It shouldn't be too much of a problem. I think with adults, it's a little more complicated if there's only a history of substance abuse or something. That makes the thing a little more complicated.
Larry?
But otherwise, it should work.
Sure, right. I would guess that there's, because of the medication involved and the possibility of abuse, that could be the reason it'd be difficult to get medication from your family doctor or your regular prescriber. But I would suggest that you talk to somebody and get some therapy, because there's a lot of things that you can do outside of medication.
Trevor, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate
it. Thank you.
John's calling from Cincinnati. Hi, John. What's your question?
Hello. How are you today?
Just fine.
I just wanted to say that your guest there just mentioned therapy, and I've never in my, you know, there's nothing negative that could ever come of therapy, but there are quite a few negative results that can come from putting people on psychoactive drugs, especially children, and mood-enhancing drugs on children. A lot of doctors are quick to prescribe this stuff to anybody. I was wondering if your guest had any thoughts on the negative impacts of long-term impacts of placing children on mood-enhancing drugs.
Dr. Collins, you probably should answer that one.
Yeah, I can answer. You know, I'm a child and adolescent psychiatrist. I've been working for like 28 years, and you know, my mission is to make sure the kids are treated, but not necessarily having on anything bad. So it's my job to make sure they're okay. But I think that most of the drugs actually are prescribed probably by our pediatricians and family docs. And I'm not saying that's not a bad thing, but they're not going to follow them as closely as probably I would. So I think it's probably within the context of making sure that you have the right diagnosis, you're following the side effects, and you remove, you know, medicines when not needed. So we try to do all of that. But again, because of the numbers of children that are involved, often, you know, child psychiatrists are not seeing them. All the other docs are seeing them.
Thanks so much for your call. Angel's calling from Pleasant Ridge. Hi, Angel. What's your question?
Hello. Thank you. I'm a 27-year-old adult, and I have been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder and bipolar disorder, and I have a 7-year-old younger sister who has been diagnosed with ADHD. But I don't know if it's true or not. I've heard that ADHD in kids, it can often be a misdiagnosis when they actually could have bipolar disorder in the future. And I'm just wondering if there are any indicators that my mother and I can look for in my little sister to possibly her having more than just ADHD or something else.
Sure. Dr. Collins, can you address that?
Yeah, that is correct. Here we have Dr. Melissa DelBello, who's one of our researchers, and she spent a lot of time on that particular question because actually both the disorders can overlap. And the largest thing about it is a mood instability that children who we think would be ADHD but actually are bipolar. When I say mood instability, we're talking about a temper tantrum that goes on for hours and hours and hours. It's something that's just not a normal tantrum. We call them affective storms. So actually, there is a distinction there, and actually sometimes you think it's ADHD, but actually it could be childhood bipolar disorder.
We're going to have to stop. Okay. We're out of time. Thank you so much,
wow.
Angel, for calling. That time went very quickly. We've been talking about mental disorders in children. My guest, Senior Vice Chair and Director of Clinical Operations with the University of Cincinnati Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neuroscience, Dr. Charles Collins, and North Key Community Care Director of Outpatient Behavioral Health Services, Larry Lindemann. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Today's technical director was Bruce Ellis.